In his new book, Leapfrogging, Soren Kaplan quotes Scott Cook, the founder of Intuit. If there's something that's really a big surprise, upside or downside, that's generally the real world speaking to you, saying there's something you don't yet understand.
I found that Intuit is one of the only companies out there that actually has the value for surprise in its corporate culture. They talk about savoring surprise. And it came from the fact that when Scott Cook started Intuit, they were providing something called Quicken, which is to balance
everybody
checkbooks.
Everybody seems to have heard it, whether they use it or not.
Exactly. You balance your checkbook at home, and it makes it easy. Well, what happened was that they kept hearing that small businesses were using their software. And they knew that was impossible because small businesses need real accounting software. So they ignored that data for over a year. Well, what happened was they couldn't ignore it anymore, and they finally looked into it, and they got a few surprises. They learned that small businesses, they were using the wrong software because it was simple and easy. And they didn't like accounting. They don't know how to do accounting. And so they were using the wrong software, and they realized that while they had thought the market was saturated for accounting software, they decided to go after it, and they launched something called QuickBooks. Within 3 months, they had 70% market share based on the fact that they opened up to this, you know, the power of surprise.
The market was saturated with, oh, my goodness, I'm supposed to be an accountant.
Exactly.
But there really wasn't any tool there. And I think one of the things you're saying is that, hey, look at how people that you don't expect to use your technology, if in this case technology or your product or your service are using it, that you never expected.
That's right. There are a lot of great examples of companies that has created a great technology, but then learn that a whole market segment is using their technology that they didn't expect, and that's really the big opportunity. A great recent example is Canon. They launched something called the Mark V camera, which is a single lens reflex camera. But shortly thereafter, they heard that videographers in Hollywood were using their low-end camera,
to consumers, but low-end to professionals.
Low-end to videographers who were using it for commercials and for reality TV shows because the quality of the video had surpassed the low-end quality of professional cameras, and it was cheaper. So what they realized is huge market for video, and now they're going after that market. Big surprise.
Both instances reflect that one of Tech Nation's facts of life in the high-tech age, and that is whoever creates a technology cannot anticipate how it will be used, who will use it, how they'll use it. And here we have it right in front of our eyes, you know. But paying attention enabled them to open up their market or open up an opportunity.
I think that there's this fundamental assumption that a lot of companies have that they need to minimize uncertainty and reduce surprises from happening.
We teach that in business school.
Yes, we
minimize risk. Yes, minimize it to the point where you have nothing left.
That's exactly right. And in some of my research, I went on to Amazon and I did a search on management books with surprise in their titles. 100% of them, every one of them is about how to minimize, prevent, or avoid the phenomena.
And you say, run to the surprise.
It's all about tapping into the power of surprise. And there's two dimensions to that. The first is business breakthroughs, whether it's technology-based or a business model. When we first experience them, we get a feeling of positive surprise. And actually, our brains are wired to appreciate those positive surprises. That's point number one. Point number two is a little more subtle. In order to create those breakthroughs, we've got to wrestle with uncertainty and open ourselves up to ambiguity and open ourselves up to the positive and the negative inevitable surprises that'll come our way when we're doing something big and trying to change the game.
And it's not just about business. I mean, I saw it really being applicable to you as an individual trying to do anything, you know, just you're trying to do an effort, you're trying to change your life, you're trying to start something. And it doesn't have to be about a business at all. It has to be about the nature of what it's like to create something that didn't exist before.
That's a great point and a great insight. And what I found, I spoke to individuals who I felt in my research were leaders who changed the game in whatever they were doing. I talked to a woman who had been head of design at Target, who transformed Target into Target. I talked to.
You mean somebody did that intentionally instead of, you know, people I know who speak French sort of making it, upgrading it? It was intentional?
It was very intentional. Robin Waters was the VP of trend and design at Target and took Target from $4 billion to $40 billion based on using design and explicitly kind of opening, not doing market research. They didn't do market research. They decided to lead the market and try to create the kind of surprise that, you know, when you walk into Target, you say, wow, this is a different experience.
You know, it's funny that you would say that because HP, and you were leader of the, was it internal strategy?
That's right.
At HP. As I recall, HP did a whole bunch of customer focus groups about, would you like a cheap color printer? And they all said no. Or, man, you know, then they produced it and it went off the shelves, off the wall, you know, success. It's not always the customer is going to tell you what your product should be.
I think that that's an important thing to realize that so when I talk to these leaders, I talk to folks like Robin Waters, I talk to the original founder and CEO of OpenTable, the online restaurant reservation service. And over what I kept hearing is you have to lead the market, but then listen to the market at the same time. It's paradoxical. So you can't just wait until a customer will tell you what they want. It's too late at that point. You have to take the initiative, think about the big game changer and the meaningful breakthrough you want to create, and then go out there and kind of test your assumptions and take those small steps to see if, you know, you're on the right track and recalibrate along the way.
Well, OpenTable is a great story in that. It was originally Easy Eats?
That's right. That's right. When I first spoke to Chuck, who was one of the original founders of OpenTable, he handed me his business plan, and it was a business plan for Easy Eats. And I have known Chuck for a while, and what evolved was OpenTable. And Chuck was really kind of instrumental in helping me see the power of surprise. And surprises, you know, we talked about canon. That's a positive surprise. But not all surprises are good. And so the question is, how do you take something that kind of blindsides you in a negative way and flip that into something positive? So OpenTable, Chuck, in the early days, went to New York City to meet with a guy named Danny Meyer, who's one of the most famous restaurateurs and has kind of the leading restaurants there. And Chuck knew out of the six competitors or so that existed at the time, if he could get Danny signed up for OpenTable's reservation service, he'd, you know, really kind of establish OpenTable.
And if people don't know this, OpenTable is what you go on to and say, hey, I'm in this town right now. I need to have a table. Can I make a reservation either right now or, you know, a month from now or whatever? And it's hooked right into the restaurant and you can go. But this is early days. Nobody had it.
Early days, no one had it. And Danny Meyer, who was really a real important customer, said, hey, Chuck, my tables are full every night. I don't need your service. Now, for an entrepreneur, that could be really devastating. And you could really say, you know, this is a real setback. But instead of taking that surprising comment and kind of walking away with your head, you know, sunk, you know, on your shoulders, what OpenTable did is they reframed that surprise to look at, well, what does Danny need? And when you think about restaurants, they might be full, but the restaurateur doesn't know who is sitting at their tables. So what they did is they created a business model around customer relationship management on the restaurant side so that they could bridge the people making the reservation with the kind of knowledge that restaurants want. And that became fundamental to their business model. They reframed their whole business model and they became the leader in the market.
Now, he also didn't like the name Easy Eats, right?
You know, that was one of the things that I think he got some feedback on early on from the restaurants. It's not about eating. It's about dining.
Ah, and here he is. He's already gone out to the investors and sold them Easy Everything. Easy Eats was just instance number one. So how does he go back to the people giving him the money saying, you know what? Remember that thing I sold you? I was so positive. We're all running down this road. I need your money to go in a different direction.
Yeah.
Not a good challenge. Surprise for them.
It is a surprise for them. And one of the things that I found over and over with some of these leaders is that there is a sense of a lot of people had a sense of humility to how they approached business. They didn't think that they had a real intent to do something big and make a big difference, how they went about it could change. And they were open to their assumptions being tested and challenged. And there was a level of kind of humility about realizing, you know what, they don't always have the right answer. They're willing to talk to anyone and everyone and, kind of share their perspective, but also be willing to change their perspective at the same time.
You're listening to Tech Nation. I'm Moira Gunn. My guest today is Soren Kaplan, the former leader of the Internal Strategy and Innovation Group at Hewlett Packard. He's today the managing principal of Innovation Point. He's here with Leapfrogging, Harness the Power of Surprise for Business Breakthroughs. Well, you had your epiphany in a small cafe in Paris. Poor you. Poor you, Soren. I'm really feeling sorry for you. But I mean, it's a very interesting example.
I have traveled the world in some of the work that I've done, and I wanted to give my family a cultural experience. So I moved my family to Paris for a year a couple years ago, put my two daughters into public school when they didn't speak any French.
Threw them right in the pool.
It really did. But one of the things I want to do is try to write a book on leadership and innovation, a topic that's been my passion. One day I walked into this little cafe, and I sat down, got a latte, and I was really just amazed and astounded by the incredible boldness, richness, and smoothness of this coffee, and looked on the wall and saw an article that basically said that this little cafe, out of 35,000 bistros and cafes, is ranked number one by the New York Times and other food critics. And so I learned about this cafe from the owner. Her name's Gloria, and she started the cafe, and she visits every plantation around the world that she buys beans from personally and sends her baristas there, and actually has a thing called Cafeotech University where budding baristas come from around the world to learn from her, and then they start their own cafes and buy their beans from Gloria. And what I realized was, one, this breakthrough, this game changer for what it means to be a cafe in Paris, surprised me. But two,
how do you get to the front of 35,000? Anything.
incredible. So I was sitting inside of a breakthrough, and I just had to ask myself, you know, I'm surprised by the fact that I wandered in here because that's the topic I wanted to write about. So that set me on the journey of researching surprise and going to talk to the leaders who had really changed the game and trying to understand the backstories of their public success stories.
I found a number of things fascinating about that example. I mean, first of all, she doesn't have any tables out, no waiters, none of the standard things that we associate with the cafe. She decided she was going to work on the coffee. She was from Guatemala, was going to work on the coffee. That's what she could do. Number two, she didn't do what we would do in the United States, meaning let's franchise this. We have to have a 72 of these. I mean, there's only so many Glorias to go around. And yet what she did do by her personalization and contacts with the beans, she started selling, had a second revenue stream here, selling the beans to other people with whom she had personal contact. I mean, we've sent you out to the plantations. This is how you make it. This is it. And she said, so she's already got a very robust business that's scalable in the sense for who she is and her small compadres, if you will, doing very well, but isn't trying for the billion-dollar IPO. It's like we are so franchised here and there. I've been traveling all around this summer. I'm like, where are we? What city are we in? What town are we in? We could be in the middle of nowhere. This mall is here. I can just pick out exactly who. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. This idea that this is this is how we're going to roll out America and business, and this is the only success, you know, is turned on its head by what you're writing here.
And people are looking, and the principles behind what you just described, people are looking for something that gives them this feeling of surprise and purpose. Gloria's purpose, she calls it out, is to advance the nobility of coffee. And so she wants to do that by teaching others. She has a revenue stream of her cafe, selling the beans. The university is a revenue stream.
Oh, her cafe university.
Yeah. So she's got multiple, you know, she's got an incredible business model. When you walk in, you're right. There are no waiters in white aprons, no high cane back chairs, no outside seating. And you feel that this is a different place. And then the coffee solidifies all of that. So the patrons come from all over the world to visit because it's an experience of quality and purpose that she gives to others and positively surprises them when they experience it.
And for you, the person with the business plan, wanting to grow this business or enterprise, part of your being able to accomplish that and feel that in the end, you know, there's no room for that in the paper. There's no, where's that section? It's not, you know, we don't teach that in business school either.
That's exactly right. When I was at HP, and it was in the late 1990s, we told our innovators, hey, take your breakthrough idea and put it into this 10-step planning template. And then we said, oh, by the way, can you just prove to us using this spreadsheet that this will be $1 billion within 3 years? And if it was,
shame
then
on
we,
you, Soren.
I know,
shame
I
on
know.
You.
I live that corporate meat grinder dream. And I think that part of what I am trying to share with those who are interested in the message in the book is that surprise and uncertainty is a natural part of life. And so it's also a natural part of business. So why fight it and resist it? Let's embrace it and use it as a catalyst for innovation.
And everything that is franchised or collected or put together doesn't have to mean that we've lost the individual. I think your example of Etsy.com actually speaks to that. That's Etsy.com. This is a website I only recently learned of, and it's really fascinating in that regard.
It is. It's a whole community of people who are interested in their own arts and crafts and then sharing those with the world. It's kind of like the Walmart of the arts and crafts world. And the thing about Etsy and about Cafeotech and about a lot of these other innovations is that the purpose of why they're created these days is really maintained as growth happens. And so that's a real struggle sometimes. You know, the franchise starts to dilute the purpose and the experience because you're standardizing everything. So the question is, how do you maintain that personalization, that experience, the original intent of what you wanted to create when you were small while you're growing it?
Which is so rewarding to humans.
It's rewarding to those working there, and it's rewarding to those experiencing it as customers.
Now, we're talking about surprise and how we even crave surprise, yet my significant other, he hates surprises. I love surprise. He hates it. What do you do if you're one of these people? There are those people out there. No surprises, please. None.
Yeah, so there's definitely a difference between kind of that personal surprise and getting scared by someone jumping out behind the door, and then the first time you pick up an iPad or you experience Cirque du Soleil. Those kinds of business surprises that really challenge our assumptions in a positive way, that's really what innovation is all about. And so when I did the research on surprise, first, our brains are wired to appreciate the positive surprises. The pleasure centers of our brains light up when we experience them. And then a couple other things happen. We want to understand how it works, why it's surprising us. We might want to experience more of it. But most importantly, we want to share that surprise with others. Think about when, you know, maybe the first time you picked up an iPhone or iPad, you wanted to share it with someone else and say, hey, look at how this works, and see their own reaction of surprise. So there's this viral element to surprise. And you look at the YouTube videos that fly around the net, or the way that Apple withholds product information and news announcements in order to create surprise. And, you know, there's a very powerful element to that.
Well, I'll have to have him listen to this portion of the interview, see if it gets any better. You also teach in the Netherlands. You teach all these principles, and it's in a little town. And there's a wonderful story in the book about a druggist there and what he's done, which has nothing to do with making money, but everything to do with the experience and sort of binding customers to you.
It's an incredible story that I had to personally experience to really understand. Every year I go to a little town called Breda, which is about 80 miles south of Amsterdam, and I teach in a program there on innovation. One day I wandered into this little pharmacy looking for some shaving cream, and as I paid for it, the owner behind the counter, his name is, I learned, is Joop. Joop handed me my change and then said, what year were you born? So I told him the year, 1968, and he pulled out this little coin, and he put it on the back of his wrist and he held it right in front of my face and said, look, for you. And I looked down and it was a Dutch guilder minted with 1968. And I was surprised and a little bit taken aback. And I kind of said, thank you, and walked out. Well, over the next several years, I went back to Joop. And each time I went in, he didn't necessarily remember me, but he did the same thing to me and to my colleagues who I was bringing there and to the students who I told about it and who would go there. And what I learned is that Joop gives a coin to every adult who comes in and gives a piece of licorice to every child.
I've been speaking with Soren Kaplan, the author of Leapfrogging: Harness the Power of Surprise for Business Breakthroughs. We'll talk more after a break. Coming up on the second half of our show on Biotech Nation, a stem cell treatment which is non-destructive to embryos. It's being used to treat macular degeneration. And on Bio Issue of the Week, David Ewing Duncan tells us restricting our calories may not enable us to live longer. Stay with us. You're listening to Tech Nation. I've been speaking with Soren Kaplan, the managing principal of Innovation Point and author of Leapfrogging: Harness the Power of Surprise for Business Breakthroughs.
Each time I went in, he didn't necessarily remember me, but he did the same thing to me and to my colleagues who I was bringing there and to the students who I told about it and who would go there. And what I learned is that Joop gives a coin to every adult who comes in and gives a piece of licorice to every child. When I asked him, you know, the marketing side of my brain said, okay, Joop, is this kind of a marketing ploy? Why are you doing this? Is it to get new business? And he said, no, it's because I really enjoy the happiness and joy that people experience. And I said, but the guilder went out of circulation in, you know, the early 2000s. Don't you run out of coins? And he laughed and he said, well, I originally found these guilders in my attic. After I started running out, people from all around the town would start delivering their own change that they are finding in their drawers and their attics to me because they want to contribute to this experience that they once had. What I realized is the power of surprise is at the heart of what Joop is doing and the experience of that little pharmacy in such a powerful way. And so that was really an experience that shaped my outlook on the power of surprise and how that leads to breakthroughs in technology, but also kind of retail experiences like Joop's.
Hey, when I was a kid and we went to the meat market, I got that slice of bologna. And I remember it to this day. It was like the first thing I said, oh yeah, remember the slice of bologna? You never know, but it's original, it's one-off, And it's there. It means something. And that's a whole different view. We keep trying to stamp out groups of them. What are you doing individually? I think it's very important. You identify a leapfrogging life cycle. Let's talk about that.
Well, when you look at how we like to try to conceive of big breakthroughs, oftentimes we create a big plan and a strategy and a vision, and we say, okay, here's our plan from A to B, and we're going to create this breakthrough. Well, if you approach it that way, then any variance from A to B that doesn't fit your plan is seen as a failure. Well, the leapfrogging life cycle basically is a model that it loosely tracks the steps that you go through in creating a breakthrough. And it's all about coming up with your sparks of surprise. What are you going to do? What impact on the world do you want to have? And traces kind of this leadership and this personal experience from the ups and the excitement to the downs and realizing, you know what, you don't have all the answers and there is uncertainty. And, you know, you hit this thing that I call the failure zone, which is the place where a lot of people just give up on their big ideas. But if you can get through that and persist, I call it optimistic persistence, then you can get to the other side and kind of move through the trials and tribulations of doing something big and ambiguous and difficult.
And you don't run from failure. Chapter 7.1, quote, you will fail. That's pretty direct, Soren.
Well, you know, I'm direct. And I think that the idea here is you will fail at some things along the way if you're doing something that hasn't been done before, and that it's okay. Obviously, you don't want to have the entire thing fail. But the idea here is if you can reframe failure in terms of it's about learning, it's about trial and error, it's about testing your assumptions, then you're able to kind of look back and say, these things that are coming at us, the surprises that test our assumptions, that test our plans, this isn't about failure. It's about moving and shifting into a different direction that actually will take us closer and faster to our goals.
And instead of sometimes just looking at the plan, reminding yourself that even though it's intangible, it's about your mindset. All you might do is change your mindset. Your plan might not change much, but your mindset changes everything.
I find that one's mindset is the guide for one's behavior. And so if you believe that you need to block everything out and just go from A to B, you may miss, and you will likely miss, those anomalies, those surprises, the things, you know, customers using your things in the wrong way, the market misperceptions that are actually clues into where the real opportunity is. If you block those things out because you're afraid of the surprises, you're going to miss opportunities.
And you say, take simple, small steps. I mean, how do you build something big out of simple, small steps? I mean, I can't imagine that at Hewlett Packard you were saying, okay, now take simple, small steps on your way to this billion-dollar business inside a few years.
Yeah, that's a challenging one for a lot of entrepreneurs and big companies. The principle behind take small, simple steps again and again and again and again is that you want to, obviously you want a big game changer, but then the question is, what are the smallest things you can do to have the biggest impact on your learning and your assumptions early on? And here's an example of that. I spoke to a woman named Barbara Talbot, who was the executive VP of marketing at Four Seasons Hotels. And in the late 1990s, Four Seasons had a problem along with a lot of other luxury brands. It was called the internet. They had to get on the internet, and they were worried that it would dilute their brand and result in big discounts. Well, what they decided to do is take some small steps. They just got a website up there with a lot of pictures of their properties. They were a business person's hotel. And so they thought, we'll get the business, you know, we'll get the hotel properties up there. We'll get an 800 number, no online reservations, because they wanted to preserve their values of high touch with their clients. And they just got a website up there. And what happened was these small steps led to some small and mid-sized surprises. The first thing they learned is after a couple months, their IT group came back and said, people are spending a lot of time on this website. They're looking at swimming pools in Hawaii, lobbies in Tokyo. We're not sure what's going on here. The second thing that happened, customer service came and said, people are calling our 800 number and they're asking us about vacations. We're a business hotel, but they're asking about vacations. Then the bigger surprise happened. The first Wall Street analyst report came out comparing hotel websites. And Four Seasons ranked number one.
But they're like in the wrong category.
Barbara still remembers the words that this analyst used. He said, Going to the Four Seasons website is like we're already on vacation. So all of these little surprises helped to confirm for Barbara and the executive team at Four Seasons that there was a big opportunity in resorts and vacations. And so what they did is they expanded globally as Four Seasons Hotels and Resorts and really went global using their website and establishing properties and resort locations. And now they're one of the most recognized global luxury brands on the planet.
Just by listening, paying attention.
Paying attention and not ignoring those surprises.
Well, I have a great one in the biotech area. There was a little company that was trying to get all this stuff going, and somebody, you know, hey, let's do a DNA analysis of our dogs, you know, to see what kind of brands they are. You know, not brands. I would say pedigrees they are. And they went to the big bio conference, and they said, guess the, you know, genetic makeup of the dog picture. They had big lines, and they ended up with a very lucrative business of, you know, give us your dog's DNA and we'll tell you what it really is. Totally out of the blue, totally because somebody stood there and laughed, saying, hey, let's screw around over here. Turned out to be a very profitable line. So you can't ignore that, or you ignore it, I guess, at your own peril.
Exactly. And the pet food industry, I believe, is bigger than the baby food industry. So, you know, people like their pets.
Not better than their babies, but they do like their pets.
That is true.
Hey, Soren, thank you so much for joining us. Please come back. Keep us updated.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
My guest today is Soren Kaplan. The book is Leapfrogging: Harness the Power of Surprise for Business Breakthroughs. It's published by Barrett Kohler. I'm Moira Gunn. You're listening to Tech Nation.